What's up, everybody? Welcome to Burning the Ships, presented by 608B Capital. Today, I've got my good friend, Yaden Smith, on the podcast. I'll get into his intro and a little bit about him in just a minute. We're going to add something in to the beginning of every podcast at my 8-year-old son's request. Recently had my daughter on an episode a couple months back, and he was a bit jealous. He wants to do an episode as well, and we will eventually, but he's 8 and has the attention span of a mosquito, so don't know that that would make for a very good episode. But I told him he could start giving me jokes to tell, and I'll put them in every podcast moving forward. So he is fantastic with, he says he makes them up, I think he finds them and then claims them as his own, but I'm going to start adding in a joke of his that he gives me every week for these episodes. So this week's joke, brace yourself. Why do golfers bring extra socks? In case they get a hole in one. So that is JJ's joke of the week. Now jumping over to Yaden Smith. Yaden's a good friend of mine. I've gotten to know him over the last year. He is in the real estate space. And also where I've really gotten to know him is in a mastermind that we're both in called Dad Edge. If y'all saw my episode, it was episode number 100 with Larry Hagner. And then I recently went on Larry's podcast as well, the Dad Edge podcast. But I'm in the, a community group through Larry's program and called the Boardroom, and Yaden is in that. So I've gotten to really know him as a human being outside of just real estate through that group. Wonderful guy, as genuine as and as authentic as they come. You'll see that in the episode. And yeah, he's got a lot of wisdom and a lot of good stuff going on that I think you guys will be intrigued by. Excuse me. So I'll go ahead and introduce Yaden and we'll get this thing kicked off. Thank you all for tuning in again. Yaden Smith is a husband of 19 years, father of 4 red-haired children, marathon runner, and an Ironman, and a business owner, in that order. Yaden is a recovering youth minister, now working full-time in real estate. He is the owner of Live Oak Real Estate and co-founder of Live Oak Capital, a real estate investment firm. They work with private investors to give them solid, consistent returns to build long-term wealth and cash flow. Yaden has helped grow Live Oak Capital to over $50 million in assets, $50 million in assets under his management since its beginning in 2019. Yaden has been in the business of building relationships since he started working as a youth minister while in college. His relationship building skills grew as he changed careers from ministry to health coaching to real estate, general brokerage to commercial real estate investing to online education and mentoring. Currently, he focuses on coaching students using the online education platform he co-founded, My First Million in Multifamily. He mentors students in the program on how to buy apartment complexes with private investor capital. In 2024, students closed 35 plus million dollars worth of deals. Read that again. 35 million worth of deals in just 2024 under his tutelage. Realizing others could change the course of their lives, he co-founded My First Million in Multifamily, an online education and coaching platform. Since its beginning, students have closed deals over $300 million in market value. Yaden is the co-founder of Live Oak Capital, a real estate investment firm. They work with private investors to give them solid, consistent returns to build long-term wealth and cash flow. Yaden has helped grow Live Oak Capital to over $60 million in assets under his management since its beginning in 2019. So quite a resume for Yaden, and he will get into the building of all that and the mindset that went behind it. And I know that you guys will get a lot of value from this. And stay tuned to the end where he talks about all the things he's offering on all his various platforms and stuff like that, along with an upcoming conference they have in March that I think many of you will be intrigued by, and I encourage you to join. So with that, we'll get it kicked off with my man, Yaden Smith. Yaden Smith, my man, welcome to Burning the Ships.
Hey, Jason, I am thrilled to be here with you today, man.
Dude, I'm fired up to have you. I've known of you for a while, but I've gotten to know you over the last, I don't know, year or so, being we're both part of Dad Edge with Larry Hagner, and you know, that I know for you, you've been in that group for quite a while, but for me, it's been such a I don't want to overuse the word life-changing and stuff like that, but that has been a very impactful group to me and just my perspective on a lot of things, and getting to know you through that has been a privilege. And you and I, you know, we'll get into it a little bit, but we have some accountability measures that we've put in place between the two of us and a few others. But with Yaden, man, welcome to the show. Really, I will, you know, I'll kind of get things started off with just turning it over to you, letting you introduce yourself at a high level, kind of tell your story, and then we'll peel the onion back a little bit from there. So
you got it. So I was born at an early age. Right. And then fast forward 38 years. So right now, I'm in commercial real estate. We do apartment syndications. My business partner and my cousin Jennings, we've been doing this now for 5 years, I think, building a portfolio, and we coach people how to do this. But my story really starts, like, the industries that I've been in over the course of my life: real estate, investing, property management, real estate brokerage, multi-level marketing, youth ministry. I started my, like, working career in ministry, actually. When I was in college in El Paso, Texas, I live now in Charleston, South Carolina, in college in El Paso, doing a youth ministry training program, going to school. Worked as a youth minister for a decade, full-time at the same church, and then I was on track to go to seminary. But when we moved home to South Carolina, realized, you know what? Ministry is not my calling. And I'm grateful that I discovered that, because it's like, you don't want to graduate from med school and realize you can't stand the sight of blood after the fact. Right. Right? I'm like, no. You need to know that way ahead of time.
So did you, how old were you when you moved back to South Carolina? Like what phase of life was
2012. So okay. I was 32. So okay. I've lived back home. We're in my hometown for past, 13 years now. Just like, okay. Blink, gone.
So you had children.
Yep.
When you made that
marriage before. This year will be our 20th wedding anniversary.
Oh,
for my wife and I. We have 4 children, 17, 14, 12, and 9. And we homeschool 75% of our children. Our daughter loves going to the elementary school that's 3 blocks from our house.
Okay.
And our boys are all homeschooled. And my wife is doing the homeschooling thing, managing, you know, everything that she manages with the family, stay-at-home mom, have privilege that that's our situation. And full-time, I do real estate investing, buying apartments, raising money from investors. And with our My First Million in Multifamily deal room, we coach people. We have a training program and a mentorship program on how to do this. How do you find deals? How do you find investors? How do you build a team? How do you raise capital and get them closed to build a portfolio?
Yeah.
The past 5 years, when Jennings and I got started, well, actually, here we go. Story time.
Let's go.
So when I moved home to South Carolina, I was like, you know, I got to make money. So I was doing multi-level marketing, helping people lose weight. And actually, surprisingly, I made enough money to buy a house doing multi-level marketing, right? I was in that. I was one of the few that actually made money. And then decided, almost on a whim, not really though, but I was talking with my little brother one day. He was talking about going into real estate. And this interesting thing happened where during the conversation, I got a phone call from a Rotary Club member, a Rotary Club president. I was in Rotary for a while. For a bunch of years. she was calling to tell me that one of our members had passed away. It wasn't unexpected. He'd been battling cancer. But in that moment, I'm listening to my little brother talk about real estate. I get this phone call that a friend of mine had just passed from Rotary. And suddenly I had this like epiphany moment of clarity, like, what am I doing with my life? I had kind of gone as far as I could with the multi-level marketing. And in that moment, my brother's talking about going into real estate. My Uncle Foster is in real estate, been doing it for a day. Like, real estate, that's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I shifted careers. Went from I closed the chapter on multi-level marketing, went guns blazing into real estate with no backup plan.
Right. But you literally burned the ships.
Right. I was like, it's like, you know what? I'm not health coaching anymore.
Yeah.
100% of my energy is focused on real estate. Now, the nice thing about the multi-level marketing companies, there was residual income for, I don't know, 6 months as it you know, tapered off. So I did have a little bit of runway. But I remember that first year in real estate, I think I made $18,000 and spent $40,000.
That equation doesn't math out.
Yes. That math don't math.
Yeah.
And then I started to build my real estate practice, my real estate business of working with clients. But man, real estate brokerage, that is a tough business. 100% transactional. Everybody I knew had a dollar sign on their back as a potential client. Always looking for the next transaction, because the moment I stopped, that's the moment I'm broke. I just haven't gotten to broke yet.
So it was...
It was a hamster wheel.
Yeah, it was a hamster wheel, but I can... Getting to know you, I can tell that idea of having that mentality, like you said, of everybody now has a dollar sign on them. Maybe not. That's not your nature, so...
It hurt.
Yeah, right.
And I got so... There was so much pain when somebody that I thought I had a real close connection to, then I see a sign in the yard and somebody else has listed their house. I'm like, it was painful.
Yeah.
And one day, sitting on a lawnmower with my cousin, and my cousin Jenny's called me. He's like, hey, man, I've been thinking about going into property management. I'm like, you know what? Actually, I have too. Because I'm tired of chasing these transactions. I want to build, and a real estate agent does not have anything that's marketable. You don't have a business. You're just a high-paid freelancer. Your book of business is not worth anything in the market. So I've been thinking about property management, and then the phone call from Jennings catalyzed that shift. I was still doing the brokerage, but I expanded into property management. We partnered up, started doing property management, and we built that business to, you know, a portfolio of 100 doors that we were managing. We built it up.
Mostly single family?
Single family. I think we had one 20-unit apartment complex that we were managing that had found through relationships and networking. So we're doing the property management, building that business. And then we kind of got to the point where it's like, to really scale this, we're going to have to go really big. Because we had one property management employee. She was managing 100 doors. I was doing all the accounting and the broker type stuff. It's like, if we're going to expand this, we need to get to like 200 or 300 or 500 doors under management to really make money, to move where we want to go economically. And in that mental space, Jennings brings to me, he's like, hey man, check this out. You should go through this course that I bought a couple years ago. Michael Blanc, how to, you know, apartment syndication, buy apartments with other people's money. After I finished laughing on the inside, I was like, dude, we're two knucklehead cousins from small town South Carolina. Guys like us don't do that.
Oh.
You need a last name like Bezos or Trump or Buffett or Gates. You got to have multiple commas in your bank account to get into the apartment game. It's like, let's do what we do. And he's like, no. Like, really, take a look at it. I'm like, okay. Went through the course, absorbed the material, and then like, I guess what do we do now? We just tell people we buy apartments? That was it. Like, we just start talking to people. We changed the conversations that we were having. And I still remember the first time I stood up in one of those B&I chapters for networking, where I shifted my pitch from I'm looking to manage property to I'm looking to buy apartments. And the craziest thing happened. Nobody laughed.
Right.
Nobody blinked. I was just writing notes. Like, okay, Yaden is now looking to buy apartments. And the commercial contractor in the group came up to me the next week and said, hey, man, a friend of mine has an apartment complex under contract, but he's not going to close on it. He wants to sell the contract. Do you guys want to talk to him? We're like, absolutely we do. Met with the guy. We actually, and it didn't even cost us anything to buy the contract. We gave him equity in the deal.
Okay.
To take over the contract.
Yeah.
We cut him into the deal. We did all the work. Right. That was our first deal, 18 units.
Yeah.
We had been going to conferences, building relationships everywhere we could to figure this game out. We got some partners that partnered up with us so we could qualify for the loan, find some investors. Close that deal. We still own it today.
What? Give me a time frame. What year was this?
Let's see. We closed on that deal in 2019.
Okay.
18 units. We bought it for $750. Renovation budget was $180. Carrying cost, closing cost was another, I don't know, $50, something like that. So basically all in for just under $1 million.
And the reason I'm asking this, Jenny, is because I love to connect timeline dots for folks. Like our listeners are a wide range of folks. We have a lot of realtors and a lot of real estate brokers that are like you said, they're transactional and stuff like that, that may have this mindset of like, that's great for them. Kind of like you did that in Bezos and all that.
Hooray for you. Some of us are still here in the real world.
Right. It literally, you just walk through y'all's entry into this, having not able to qualify on your own for a loan, not able to afford the assignment fee or the sale of that contract. So you creatively got that wholesaler or whoever it was, you got them in on the deal. Y'all brought probably very little capital to that deal.
Zero.
In 2019, y'all were able to creatively, brand new at this. Now you educated yourself leading up to it.
Oh, yeah.
You took action 2019. We're talking 6 years ago to get into your first deal. It can, like, you got to take the action. You got to educate yourself and make the relationships, but it can happen pretty quickly. And now take us from there, man. Where, I mean, I know it all happened.
Here's the crazy thing, right? Because being in real estate, I knew that real estate was going to be my retirement. Right. As a real estate agent, just helping people buy and sell. Right. There's no 401k. There's no pension. It's just you need to save money and invest it so you can retire, because I didn't want to be slinging houses when I'm 80.
Right.
And so here are the numbers. We closed on that deal in the summer of 2019, 18 units. The market rents on that property were about $500 a unit for the one bedrooms. Market was 800. Should have been at 800 for the one bedrooms, you know, 950 for a two bedroom. So we bought it. We had the plan. We had partners with more experience than we did. So we bought it. We started to, and this, we put this in our property management portfolio. We managed it at the beginning. We had not sold our company yet. We hadn't sold our book of business for management. So we bought this property. We're doing the work. I'm doing the asset management. I'm managing the project, the construction, coordinating the stuff. So it took about 15 months to completely stabilize, finish the renovations, get all new leases or new leases, not necessarily new tenants. Some of the tenants stayed. Some of them moved on. This property had been built by the guy who owned it. He and his dad had just kind of built it piecemeal over decades.
Right.
So there's no uniformity between them. It's like, let's build this 4 units here. Next year, let's build these 4 units here.
Right.
So it's an eclectic mix. But think 1980s thick green shag carpet, that brown wallboard on
no
the wall.
Else.
Right?
No updates. Right.
No updates. Right. They just built it and let it ride.
Yeah.
Decades.
Right.
So we come in, we renovate it, new flooring, new paint, new fixtures, new counters, new most everything. It's new roofs. We get it to the stabilization, and our game plan was the BRRRR method, right? Buy, renovate, refinance, and then repeat. So after we finished the renovation, we went through the refinance process. At that time, it was appraised at $1.45 million. Just under 1.5, like just under. So let's say $1.5 million, not 1.4. We refinanced it into long-term agency debt with, I think, Freddie Mac. We have a Freddie Mac agency loan on that. The refi proceeds were $1.1 million on the 1.5 evaluation. So we paid off the first loan, gave the investors all their capital back, and there was still about $100,000 of refi profit that we were able to disperse.
Right.
And now the property, I would say it's worth 1.75 easily, if not $2 million for that property.
Right.
And from my real estate background, it is mind-boggling. I remember sitting at the closing table when we refied it, thinking, I just solved my retirement.
Mm-hmm.
In 2 years, that's it. I don't have to be like, I could just keep doing real estate for the next 20 years, and I have this asset that I have ownership in that's going to increase in value, cash flow, and in 20 years, who knows how much it'll be worth and how much cash it'll be spitting off. But in one deal, I realized the power of the multifamily. It would have taken me, let's talk real numbers. On this deal, I think my equity is 25% of this deal. So we built a 19th unit out of garage space that wasn't being used. So 19 units, 25%. That means basically almost five doors are mine.
Right. This is important.
To buy one single family house a year, one, you got to have 50 to 100K for the down payment.
Yeah. It's so important what you're talking about. I'm in legacy family with Tim Bratz, but he says this all the time. He'd rather have 10% of a watermelon than an entire grape.
And dude, I love Tim so much. So we went to Tim's conference. That was the first big conference we went to. And I still remember this is back when it was live. They had the Commercial Empire Live. We went to that conference in 2019 before we closed on the Pinopolis property. We went up there, went to the conference in Cleveland. Dude, a ticket was $5,000.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it was for Jennings and me. We both got to go for $5,000. We had to fly up there. We could barely afford to fly. Like, that was all our reserves. We're getting to the conference. We stayed with family, you know, making sandwiches for lunch so we don't have to spend $40 at the food court. And I still remember sitting in that conference, Tim is talking, and he was talking, and he mentioned that he was about to close on a couple hundred units in Oklahoma with George Abreu. George was there. George is with Elevate. George was there. And I distinctly remember, like, man, I wish I were that guy. I want to be that guy. And I felt so out of place in that conference. Like, I have no portfolio. I have no rental. I have no net worth. I have no liquidity. Like, I'm paying all my bills and trying to save money for college and cars and retirement. Man, when you have four kids, there's not usually $50,000 left over at the end of the year that you just, you know, dump into a 401k. More like $5,000, maybe. We went to that conference and we learned Tim's model. And I remember him saying, like, would you rather have a grape all to yourself or a small slice of a big watermelon?
Yeah.
I'm like, I love watermelon. So I'm in.
Yeah.
And that was where, at that conference was where we met our loan sponsor and his partner who partnered with us on that first deal, that 18 units. We qualified for the loan because of partners. We had investors because of partners. Jennings and I were the operators doing the weekly asset management. We were also managing it. So, like, we were the hands-on guys doing the work.
Yeah.
And after that, it just didn't slow down. we kept finding it. I found another deal from that networking group, the BNI chapter. And then we started our Facebook group, My First Millionaire Multifamily, so we could find more deals and more investors. We closed 13 deals in 2.5 years.
Unbelievable.
We got started. It was
what?
I'm going to tell you, we made mistakes.
I think some back away. A question about that. So carry on with that thought, because I got a question about the Facebook group and all that. So go ahead.
Well, in our quest to find deals and find money, that's why we started the Facebook group, so we could expand our communication, one-to-many communication. We would go live twice a week into the group, talking about commercial real estate. We'd talk one time and we'd interview somebody about commercial real estate another time. And the group exploded. It shot to 20,000 people. Now it's like 26,000 people now. And along the way, we started to get messages from people in the group asking if we had any education. Like, do you guys have a course? Do you guys have education? You're talking about this. We're listening. We want to do this. And so it's like, okay, we need to do a course. So it took us like 6 months to create all the videos, work through all the processes. Like, how does this actually work? If we had to document that, we started documenting everything that we do, built out the course. We started selling it. And immediately we got these questions. Do y'all have any accountability? And it was then that I started to notice that information is not enough.
Nope.
Information, this is a phrase that I landed on. I'm not going to take credit for creating it, but I've been saying it now for a couple of years. Information in isolation ends in frustration.
Information in isolation ends in frustration. I love that.
It does. Because the information is not enough. You have to have... In a lot of things, you have to have a network. You have to have a community. Especially if you're going into something if you're a single family, right? A single family deal, if it goes south, you know what? $30,000, $50,000. I realize those are not small numbers.
Right.
But you could survive it. You could figure out a way. It's like, okay, that didn't work. Now I'm just going to go back to my regular life. Just add a zero. For an apartment deal. I remember looking at that 18 units. I'm like, if this is right, this is a fantastic deal. If Jennings and I are wrong, we have just destroyed our financial future. Like, we're going to, there'll be hundreds of thousands of dollars in losses and we will not be able to recover for a long time.
Right.
And having our partners with us who had more experience than we do, being able to review things and say, yeah, this is good. Let's go. It's the community where you can ask questions of people who've done it before, have more experience. Having our partners gave us the confidence to take the action. And what I've seen in the deal room where, you know, you don't need another course. You don't need to subscribe to another podcast. You don't need another listen to an audio book. You don't need more education. You need to start taking action. Education's important. And if you don't know anything, that's where we start. But that's just the beginning. It's about how can you apply the information. And being in the community strengthens the commitment, strengthens the process. Real estate's a relationship game. You have to build relationships in real estate.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, not just in real estate, I think life in general, and you and I can point to, you know, the other group we're in with Dad Edge, we'll get into that in a minute, but it's so important. Like, people, most people think that, or they kind of sit around waiting for motivation to come, right? And they wait for that motivation to trigger action, or when in actuality, sometimes you just got to take action to inspire the motivation and be around people that can inspire that through accountability. And if you're, you know, which I believe most people are genuinely good people, like they're good, honest people with integrity. you get around other people like that, you don't want to let them down, right? So,
exactly.
Look, if I'm looking at you, you're looking at me, and we're both trying to get here, and we're in this group together, we're going to work a little bit harder at it just because I don't want to let you down, because I know we're both working at it, and I don't want to be the guy that's left behind. So that, there's your motivation, but you got to take the action to join those groups and be a part of that. So I think you're hitting on something really important, but also folks just, a lot of folks never know about because they don't take the action to do these things, right?
When I started my real estate career, I started with a local brokerage here in Charleston. And I remember being in the sales meeting one week, just getting started, right? Like, what do I do? How do I do this? And the training broker in the office, he was talking. It was Thursday morning, I think. And I still remember this. I still remember what he said, you know, gosh, almost over 10 years ago now. I'm like, look, you can do this business from the coffee shop, from your home office. You can make your phone calls, send your emails, do your work, right? But as you get started, I really strongly encourage, come into the office. And what he said next, I say consistently. He said, come into the office because environment trumps will.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're in the office and Shirley comes in just having a closing, that's inspiring.
Yep.
Foster comes in, they just signed up a listing, that's inspiring. It's like, I want to do that. We absorb the motivation from the environment because willpower is a finite resource, right? When we're recording this, it's January 28th. How many people have already used up all of their willpower for their New Year's resolution?
Right, yeah.
Well, I would say a lot, very high percentage.
What, Quitter's Day was last, or Friday before last or whatever. And yeah, you're exactly right.
And
yeah.
And we think about, it's like, it's a perspective shift to where, did somebody quit? Yeah, they quit. But they didn't quit because they're a bad person. They quit because they didn't understand that they were only relying on willpower, right? They have all this motivation, hyping themselves up. It's like, this year, this is the year I'm going to change. Well, I can tell you that motivation sucks.
Yeah.
Before I started working as a health coach, I lost 60 pounds with the same multi-level marketing company that I worked with.
I didn't know that about you.
Dude, I mean, anybody who loses 60 pounds, there's one word to describe who they used to be. Fat.
Fat.
And like,
right.
It's just like, dude, I was carrying around 60 pounds of weight I did not need.
Right.
And I'm not ashamed to say it. But my journey to that weight loss was every year, night before my birthday, step on the scale, be like, this is the year.
Yeah.
My birthday's in September. And then it would step on the scale again, New Year's Eve. You're like, all right, this is the year.
Right.
For year after year.
Yeah.
Because I was relying on my willpower to change.
What helped? Like, what pushed you off into the next?
Yeah, man, this is beautiful because living in El Paso at the time, we had had our first baby. We had all our babies at home, you know, with midwives just to make people uncomfortable. But our midwife, when our first son was born, this was almost 18 years ago, as he's 17. So our midwife was 300 plus pounds. And then when my wife was pregnant, I don't want to say we were pregnant because ain't no we being pregnant. I was just in the room while my wife was being pregnant. So we're expecting baby number two, and the midwife would come to our house for prenatal visits. And every month she's like, she'd been talking about this weight loss program that she was working on. She's like, I lost 10 more pounds. And I was thinking like, hooray for you. Some of us are still here in reality where magical weight loss doesn't happen. And for 9 months, she lost 100 pounds in 9 months. And what I saw is like, oh, this is not a diet. Something has changed in this woman's life. And then 1 year, I'm stepping on the scale, as I did, my brain snapped. Because I'm like, I've gained 10 pounds a year without fail. and I can't stop. I've tried and I can't do it. And there were a couple of things that happened in that moment that I talk about now with coaching, with life, with growth. I think there are three things that have to be present for real change to happen. One, you have to hit rock bottom. You have to hit that point where I don't care what it takes. I am not living like this. And it doesn't have to be bankrupt, lose your family, lose your house, living on skid row. I mean, that's a really low bottom. Check myself into rehab type bottom. But they're all kind of high bottoms, right? It's like, you know what? I suspect, Jason, that you would never grab a Big Mac out of a trash can and eat it. Right? It's like, some people do.
In the right circumstances, I guess I would.
Right. We have to hit that rock bottom. And that's what happened to me in that moment. Yeah. Rock bottom is not enough, because if you try and change just from there, you're still just relying on willpower. I had watched Katia, our midwife, lose 100 pounds. I'm like, whatever she's doing is working. And I saw somebody living the life that I wanted, and I found hope. Right? I saw somebody doing what I wanted to do. It's like, if she can do it, there's hope for me. The third piece was the community, was the environment. With the Take Shape for Life, now it's called Optavia program, you have a health coach, you're put in this micro environment of health, focus on your habits, checking in with your health coach regularly, right? You're creating this environment of support. And those three things, I lost 60 pounds in 3 months following the program. Started working as a health coach. And those three things, catalyst for change, rock bottom, hope, and community. Those three things. You've seen it with the Dad Edge, right?
Yeah. Yep,
I joined the Dad Edge, almost 3, maybe 4 years ago now. I heard Larry talking at a real estate conference, of all places.
Mm-hmm.
Jennings and I were speakers at this conference. Larry was a speaker. He was talking about this appreciative inquiry process. And I was thinking, like, I have no idea what that is. But it sounds amazing. Like, that is what I want with my children. I want to be that kind of dad. This guy is that kind of dad. I want to join his program. Join the Dad Edge. It's like, I hit rock bottom. It's like, I do not want to go down the path that I think I'm on as a dad. I want to get on a better path. I saw hope with Larry. I plugged into the community with the Dad Edge. And now I don't have to worry about my own willpower. All I have to do is show up on the Friday call.
Yeah.
It's turbocharge of renewed commitment.
You're whether you're intending this or not, you're sharing a theme here from yourself that I think is pretty powerful. So rock bottom, hope, community. You take it one step further that I think adds to the accountability piece, is because you talked about the real estate, okay? You and Jennings decide you're going to educate yourselves. You're going to go all in. And as soon as y'all started having just a little bit of success with it, you said, oh, we got to inspire some other people. So you start your Facebook group. You start a community. And then creating that community, if you're the head of that snake, you're automatically held accountable to what you're doing. So you had to keep doing what you were doing. You hit rock bottom with the weight. You get your hope through your midwife and folks like Larry and stuff like that. You join a community, but you also, as soon as you lost your 60 pounds, you start coaching people. Well, you can't be a coach and then gain 60 pounds back, right? So you're
like, dude, I would be in a grocery store and I'd be like, oh, I so badly want to buy that king size Snickers bar.
Yeah.
But what if one of my clients sees me as I'm walking out of the grocery store?
And it's funny, but it's also, it's like
an extra layer of accountability.
It's the next level, man. And you're speaking to something that has completely shifted my whole approach to everything I do. And it's been recent. I'm 43 now, but probably like 38, 39, it started really hitting me that the only way I'm going to sustain anything is I've got to be really public about these goals that I'm passionate about. Business goals, fitness goals, health, all of that, because otherwise I get excited and obsessed about something. You can have windows out. But now, like, for example, my business partners, Bill Phillips and Tim Blodgett, we have this workout streak going on that has now gone on over 3 years. Well, if I was not public about that and I didn't have to remain accountable to them, not just the competitive piece of it, because I don't want to lose, but if I didn't publicly say that, it would be so easy to just, I'm done with it. I'm going to move on to another goal or something like that. But because now everybody knows that I'm doing it and everybody knows that you lost 60 pounds and that you coach this stuff, or that you've built this real estate portfolio and you coach this stuff, you can't turn back. Like, there is no turning back. And I think that is like next level piece that folks never make it to, which is why they don't sustain success in a lot of cases. I really believe that. So, and it's powerful hearing you speak to it.
With that one thing so one of the things that I do is I write. So I love to write stories, talk about life, connected to business, connected to personal growth, connected to something to write something that I hope it inspires me. If it doesn't inspire anybody else, I'm writing for my own benefit. But I wrote something I shared with one of the accountability chats from the Dad Edge. And one of the guys, Corey, landed on something that I wrote. He's like, I love this, dude. Because I didn't even realize what I was writing. And it's like, commitment thrives in community. It dies in isolation.
Yeah. It's right along the same thing you said earlier. Information in isolation ends. And yeah, and that's the theme is the same. Community, man. People, like, that is, you can go back to the beginning of humanity, of humans being on this earth, that is what everybody thrives in community.
Community makes it so you survive.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned this because I want to hit on it because I'm fascinated by it. You mentioned writing and your love for journaling. Talk a little bit. We don't have to spend too much time on it, but you have over, was it like 10 years of journaling that you have now created into a book?
So I'm grabbing my phone because I'm looking at my journal. I keep a digital journal.
Yep.
And when I look at it, let's see, the oldest entry that I have, September 11th, 2012. That was the date my son Oliver was born.
Okay.
So I have 13 years of data on myself.
Yeah.
13 years of writing what my life is. And in a personal growth group that I'm in, we talk about what we call the core four, these four core habits that I've been working to ingrain in my life. And you see it in our Monday chat, right? Where it's like, these are my habits for the past week. It's reading, journaling, exercise, and meditation. Those four things. And with journaling, what I have found, the power of journaling is not only in being able to process and write down, but with the digital journal, it has the cool thing about that, like Facebook does, like, hey, this is what you wrote a year ago, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So every day I get reminded of where I've been and I get to see how far I've come. Because too often we're only ever looking forward, like, oh my gosh, that mountain is so far away. I'm never going to get there. Without looking back to see, oh man, I have come a long way. Even if I don't get to the mountain, I have come so far. And I get to process my life in a way that I don't know that I could if I didn't have this resource. And with the journal, yeah, I've exported, right now I only have 2 years, but my goal is export the entries as PDFs, get them, you know, self-published with just a one-off book. I have two of them on my bookshelf right now, 2012 and 2013. My goal is, my kids aren't ready for it yet. 2012 was like TVE, rated E for everyone. it starts to get TV-14, and there's some years like, this is MA, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't want my 15-year-old reading these years because I was in some dark places.
Yeah.
But I want to be able to gift my children a set of basically my life.
What a legacy, man.
So they get to see, oh my gosh, this is what my dad was going through when I was a teenager, when I was 20, when I was 9. And my hope is that as they read that, they'll be able to grow more than I did, right? Instead of feeling isolated, be like, oh my gosh, I don't have anybody to talk to about this. Be like, oh man, my dad went through the same shit that I'm going through now. And we say shit on the podcast.
Yeah, you're good, man.
Like, I'm going through the same nonsense that my dad went through when he was 30. And look where he is.
Yeah, I love it. You inspired me. I had never, not one day in my life, journaled. Not one day. Now, I kind of process things in my own way, but I don't get it out and down into anything. But I have started journaling through, I think, the same app you use, because you sent me to it. The one thing, it's not a daily thing for me. I'm still working on trying to make that a habit. I'm not in that mode. I kind of do it, I would say, on average twice a week. But what it's really helping me with is, I love this feature of it. It's mostly geared towards my kids, because you've inspired me with kind of creating something for them. But I get to kind of offload a lot of the thoughts and things that I'm processing, but I dump pictures in there too.
Oh, yeah, I'm constantly taking.
So I can just drop all these
pictures. I'll put a picture with no commentary. Just
right. Right. I just did one yesterday, because my son had a tough wrestling tournament this weekend. So I journaled about how proud I was of him and how he stayed calm and all that stuff and how much he's growing and how much blah, blah, blah. And then I just dumped a bunch of pictures from the wrestling tournament in it. Like, that's there. It's not going anywhere. And that has been, I appreciate you're at an extreme level with it and sustained it for so long, but it has inspired me to do the same.
One of the other things that's super cool about journaling is that every time I journal, I am giving a gift to my future self.
Oh, yeah.
Because I get to relive my life.
Yeah.
The good and some of the bad, but actually I don't even relive the bad. I love, actually, when shit goes south, I love journaling.
Yeah.
Because one thing that I learned kind of by accident after journaling for several years, because I'd be all angsty and emotional, like, right, typing it all out. And then the next year, that entry would pop up. And I'd be like, oh, man, I remember that day. Yeah. But I'm still standing. And I survived. And I made it. And I started to notice, like, you know what? I've felt this emotion before. I remember the last time I experienced this. And I survived. So it gave me this fortitude of like, you know what? I feel like shit today. But tomorrow's going to be better. And the next day is going to be better after that.
You said something. This has been months ago. I think it was on a Dad Edge call. I'm pretty sure. But it resonated with me so much. And I don't know that I've like, thank you for this, but it inspired a podcast episode for me talking about this one thing, is the idea of what you were just saying, but you said it, paraphrasing a little bit. I have survived 100% of the bullshit I faced, or something like that. I have
every single crisis in my life so far, I have 100% success rate.
At 1,000. Yeah. And I love that mentality, man. Like, if you are breathing, and you are
moving about 1,000.
You're batting 1,000. And if folks can just, in tough, dark spots, take that perspective, that's pretty powerful, man. If you feel it and believe it, you know. So, and because it's true, you got to believe it. But
I had no idea. But yeah, I received that, and I'm so happy to hear that it was.
I'm the world's worst at, receiving something, because I take in so much information every day, and some things like that was a very powerful thing to me. And this is the first time I've acknowledged you about it. It was so powerful. I recorded like a 30-minute ramble on me just talking about that idea, you know. So I appreciate that. couple quick things, because I don't want to want to respect your time, and I want you to touch on, you go wherever you want with this, but I know the thing you're most proud of in life is being a father. You've got four kids. You are a literal rock star. You travel and play in a band with your oldest son, I think. But you pour a lot of time into your family, and it's not just pictures and thoughts and clips for social media. It's legit. I know that. So talk about the importance of them, your wife, your family, everything there, and how it inspires you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for that. The name of our company is My First Million in Multifamily. We're about making money and making a lot of it. But I remember the first time I heard Larry talk. It's like, you know, you don't want to get to the end of your life with a full bank account and an empty house at Thanksgiving. That's not winning. That's not. And I think about it now. I mean, I really think about it now because my oldest is 17 and we're having conversations about when he is going to move out. And my heart breaks. Because I thought I had more time, right?
Yeah.
But the real impact is not in the size of a real estate portfolio. The real impact is in the quality of relationships that we cultivate over the course of our life. Because the power for change, the power for growth is in relationships. It's not in a bank account. It's not external. It's internal. And my goal is, I want to partner with my 17-year-old son to start an electrical contracting company. He wants to be an electrician. He's taking his apprenticeship classes now. My 14-year-old son wants to be, actually, he wants to be a Formula One mechanic. I have no idea how to make that happen. I don't even know if I can. But I'm going to be there to support him. Yeah. My son, Oliver, he wants to lift weights and be stronger than dad, which he will if he keeps lifting weights, because he's built just like I was when I was 12. Mm-hmm. And I'm no slouch at 44.
Right.
My daughter, Eleanor, she loves music. She loves art. I want to be there to support her. And one thing that we learned from the Dad Edge is this idea of safe psychological space. My goal is I want to be the guy that when the shit hits the fan for my kids, I'm on speed dial.
Yep.
Right? My sister just finalized her divorce yesterday. And my dad was there with her. And I have four kids. And I was just thinking about this the other day. It's like, I am terrified for my son who's 17. He went to court by himself the other day. He got a speeding ticket. It was 53 and a 25. No bueno. And I had to have a like, hey, dude, let's talk. Right? I had to have one of those conversations. With compassion, but setting clear boundaries. And he handled it all by himself. And I can't help but think, like, I wish I could protect my son from the bumps and bruises, the steamroller that life is. Because make no mistake, man, it's a grinder. It's a steamroller. But then I thought about my own journey, the problems and the struggles and the pain that I'm going through to get me where I am now. And it's painful to have that same, I have to let my son make his own mistakes.
Yeah.
I have to be there for him with compassion, with love and support, so that whatever happens, he can continue to grow. So being a dad really is, I can build a real estate portfolio in 10 years. Now, I can do this after my kids are gone. But, well, I'm in South Carolina, right? We just had 5 inches of snow last week. Hey, so here's the story. We had 5 inches of snow. Our neighborhood in town has like the only hill in the low country of Somerville. And my 12-year-old, 9-year-old, they're like, Dan, let's go sledding. And my initial thought was, I don't make us. It's cold. We got to get over there. And then as I sat there with my thoughts and emotion, like, you know what? This is the last time that my 12-year-old son is going to be able to go sledding. The last time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I thought about it like that, I'm like, there is nothing else that I need to do today. Because this is the only opportunity that I am ever going to have to go sledding with my 12-year-old.
It's powerful, man.
Right?
Yeah.
And like, when we think about it like that, this is the, because as a parent, I remember reading this and man, it hit me like a sledgehammer to the face. It was like, we don't know when the last time is the last time.
Yep.
You just wake up one day, it's like, you know what? I can't remember the last time that I tucked my son in bed. Because it just hasn't happened. They just outgrow things.
Can I share this?
Yeah.
And I'm going to try my best to share it without... I'm an emotional dude. Everybody that has listened...
Oh, dude, I've already teared up all three times talking. So bring it on.
But I had something happen recently with my daughter's 13. And I forget who... I had a guest on. It might have been Larry Hagner. Whoever, it doesn't matter who it was. But I was talking about... my daughter, ever since she was a baby, a toddler, she's always slept in her own bed. But on the weekends, she'll, like Friday or Saturday night, she'll always lay in bed with either me and my wife until she falls asleep. And then I put her on my back and carry her up. I've done it since she was a year old, without fail. Every weekend, if we're around, she's going to lay in bed with us and I'll carry her up on my back. So I was talking to, and now she's 13, she's maturing, she's, you know, almost 90 pounds. Like, it's like, I've been training for this for a while, but now it's a heavy load on my back. So I was talking to Larry about it, and I was like, I don't know when the last time I'll get to do that will be, right? She's 13. She's getting big. Maybe one day she's going to be too cool to hop on dad's back to be carried up the steps, even though she still might be living with us. Maybe she'll be too cool to lay in bed at 16 years old and fall asleep with mom, you know, on a Saturday night. So about 2 weeks ago, this was months ago that I recorded this episode. I had her on the podcast just as it was over the holidays and I didn't have any guests lined up. So I had her on the podcast and she interviewed her. We didn't talk about that at all. So her episode comes out and I showed her how to get on Apple on through her iPad or whatever to listen to the episode. And she listened to it, was all excited. She's on a podcast. Well, she goes, unbeknownst to me, goes back and listens to like a ton of episodes that I've done with other people. Okay. And most of them are conversations like this. And she comes to me, we're riding in the road the other day. And I made some comment about, we were joking about how much she's growing so fast. She said, Dad, I heard your podcast where you said that you're worried about me not wanting to, you know, fall asleep in y'all's bed and carry you up on it. She said, for as long as I live, if I'm staying in that house, you can always carry me up the steps and I'll always go to sleep. Dude,
I'm not crying. You're crying.
Yeah. So that's powerful, man. And it's just stuff like that. Right. There will be a day where I don't carry her. I mean, she eventually has to move on. I can't have my 30-year-old daughter step sleeping in the beach. But she made the joke. She was like, you just got to stay strong enough because I'm going to keep growing and you got to be able to carry me. I was like, you got it, baby. So
done and done.
Yeah. And it's so powerful, man. And nothing else matters. Right. Nothing else matters. All the other bullshit I can figure out. Like if my businesses fail or we go through rough spots, at the end of the day, I've still got those pretty faces looking at me. My wife, my daughter, my son. You've got your four and your wife. Like, they're going to be there. They've supported you. They've supported me through all the negative bullshit. And they're still there. And they still loved you. And they love me all along the way. And that, like, That's all you need. Everything else is just gravy on, man, or icing on all that. And what you've created, because you've got that solid foundation, is so inspirational, man. And I appreciate you. Like I said, I've followed you and Jennings for a while before joining Dad Edge. In fact, Jennings had me on his podcast before I joined Dad Edge, and that's how I discovered Dad Edge, is through Jennings. So I appreciate both of you guys, man. But you've become a very important piece of my weekly routine. You know, not just the Dad Edge group, but we have that side accountability group where we're sharing each other's habits and stuff like that. You hold me accountable every day that I don't do my cold plunge, which is one of my habits. Or if I have a drink,
this is another not checked box. I'm going to have to send this on Monday.
Like, I just sent y'all last night my habits from the prior week, and it got down to like single digits here in Virginia for 3 straight days, and I didn't go out and do a cold plunge any of those days. So I couldn't check the box, and I had to send that. I was like, shit, man, I can't keep doing this. But I appreciate you for that, man, because you inspire that. Like, you got me connected, like I said, to the journaling app, the Habit Bowl app, all these other things. And it's the theme I mentioned earlier with you that I can hear as you tell your story. You find where you're struggling. You find inspiration and hope. You create or join a community, and then you become the community, and that's that next level. And you are great at that, man. And I appreciate you for that. So,
thank you, brother. I received that.
Yeah. Yep. And one last thing, I could go on, Yaden, talking to you for hours.
But this is a 3-hour pod. This could be a Joe Rogan episode.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I do really quick want to turn it over to you to let you promote everything y'all have going on in business, because we have a lot of folks that listen that I certainly think would find value in y'all's Facebook group, the higher level group and deal room, and then the event y'all have coming up soon, if you want to share all that.
Thanks, man.
Yep.
Yeah, so y'all, if you're listening to this and it resonates, if you want to get into apartments, I'm telling y'all, like, don't try and do it on your own. Find a mentor, find a community, find somewhere you can plug in, whether it's with us, whether it's with Legacy, like, find somewhere where you can connect. You cannot do this stuff by yourself. It just won't work. Save yourself the headache. So for us, we have a big Facebook group called My First Million in Multifamily. It's free. I share my stories. I write my stories. I post them in there. There's information. We have speakers that we do, you know, streaming into the Facebook group periodically. There's a lot of questions and answers. And we work really hard to clean it up, right? Ain't no spam. Like, one strike, you're out.
Yeah.
So we have that for support. Our Deal Room program is our education, mentoring, networking, accountability engine that really dials in the process and helps somebody stay committed to the action that they need to take to build a portfolio. You can find out Facebook group, My First Million in Multifamily, request to join. We'll get you in there. With the Deal Room, myfirstmillioninmultifamily.com. Take you to information about what we do. If you want to book a call with us, there's some questions at the bottom. Grab a spot on the counter. You can talk with me or Jennings personally. We'll talk with you about where you are, see if the Deal Room might be a fit. If it's not, go find something that is.
Right.
If this is, like, we want people that are committed and it's a fit for it. And we also have a conference coming up March 6th, 7th, and 8th here in Charleston, where we got networking, we got speakers, we got workshops, we got breakout sessions. We're going to have an awards banquet Thursday, Friday, Saturday here in Charleston. DealRoomLive.com is where you can get all the information. Grab a ticket. Get there. If you're interested in multifamily, come to the conference. Start building relate. Get in that community. Get the hope. If you have rock bottom, we have hope and we have community.
Yeah.
Right? Just add water and stir.
There you go. And this event, unfortunately, I can't make it this year, but I can definitely speak, because I have connected with a lot of folks in y'all's community. Actually, the episode that will come out probably a week or two before this, I had Tim Vitale on, and I didn't know how
Tim has been with us since day
one. Right, yeah. But there's so many reputable folks that have connected with you guys and have received the influence of you guys and done been better because of it. So we're going to drop all the links you just referenced, everything in the show notes.
And Jason, I'll also give you a link where all my writing is published on medium.com. I'll give you a link.
Perfect.
Anybody, you just want an inspirational story, I hope inspirational, check it out.
Love it. And follow Jennings too. I mean, he does the post. I'm in the Facebook group he referenced, but to your own personal page, you post a lot of a lot of it has nothing to do with real estate. It's just mindset and life. And a lot of things you've talked about today, you go in depth with your writing. And, that's definitely a strength of yours, is putting the what's up here into words so that people can digest it. And so I encourage everybody to check it out. And Yaden, again, I can't thank you enough, man. I'm very thankful that our paths have crossed, and we're both in our early 40s, got a lot of life to live, I hope, and hopefully we can stay connected and continue doing that together, my man. So I appreciate you joining us.
Jason, thank you so much, brother.
Man, what another great episode, great guest. My guests continue to blow me away with the value they bring. In a lot of cases, I'm taking or asking for an hour of their day, right? Sometimes over that. And for them to take the time, like Yaden just did, to drop so much value. He gave it so much attention he was present, as are all my guests. He wasn't distracted, wasn't playing with his phone, nothing like that. And as the host, that's makes it very easy for me to have a good, candid conversation that's authentic. And I hope that resonates and came through. Yaden dropped so many bombs. He touched on the business stuff, how he went. I mean, folks that are considering getting into real estate, or if you're in it in some way or form or fashion now, and you're trying to expand or grow into something else, he just kind of laid it out how they did it. He went from 2019 not being involved in multifamily at all, other than property management of a few units, but went from that to figuring out a way to bring value to a bigger deal, raise capital, get partners involved, where he and his cousin Jennings had a little slice of it, but they got the experience through that first deal, and then creating a community after that. And I love how he illustrated it, not just in real estate, but other areas of his life where, essentially he hit quote unquote rock bottom, right? And that's different to different people, but for him, rock bottom. And then he had hope by seeing others that were doing, he went to a conference, a mastermind, and saw somebody that he wanted to aspire to be like. So that gave him the hope that it's possible. And then he got involved with the community and ultimately took action. And then ultimately created his own community to build accountability, and then just grew it exponentially from there and continues to do so. So that's inspiring to hear. It's 2025 now as we hear this. They started that in 2019, and he had years of life training, like overcoming adversity and getting through things and trying things that didn't work and all these things to build up to that, continuing to try and finally, knock it out of the park with what they're doing. So I just love how there's so many parallels between what he's done in business to what he's done in weight loss and just everything in parenting, everything he touched in that episode. And it really, we just finished recording it. So I'm still pretty fired up about it and inspired. I want to encourage everybody to, I'm going to have all the links he referenced in the show notes. Check them out. Go follow what Yaden is doing. Go join their Facebook group. Just that alone, it's free. Like, they're not charging anything. Now, they have different levels that you can join their coaching platforms and stuff like that. That is a more of a paid option. But if nothing else, just go join that free group. See what they're all about. See if you can find some inspiration there. I feel certain that you will. And if, this is coming out mid-February, So in about 3 weeks, they have a fantastic event going on in Charleston, South Carolina. And we'll drop the link to that also. But it's, I believe, March 6th through the 8th. And here's what I want to encourage you to do. If you're a real estate agent, a broker, you're dabbling in real estate, you're thinking about getting into multifamily and syndications and stuff like that, you want to learn more about it, do this. Go to that event. It's in Charleston, South Carolina in March. The weather's going to be beautiful down there. Book a weekend. Go down there. Spend a few days with those guys at that event, networking. Take your family. Take your spouse and make a weekend of it. So, you know, knock off a couple things. Go join that event. Get some inspiration. Get some education. Build some relationships and network. But then spend a couple extra days and go enjoy Charleston. I've been down there several times now. Go eat at all the restaurants. Hall's Chop House. One of my favorites. So go check all that out. But I feel certain you will find value in that. So check the link out. Link up with Yaden and or his cousin Jennings. Jennings was on the show back in the early stages of the show where it was not quite as good of a quality as it is now as far as the production factor. But go check that episode out to learn more about Jennings as well. Two very good dudes. And Yaden, again, I'm very thankful that he joined us today, and I hope y'all enjoyed that. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.